Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community. People just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
My new friend, Steve McIntosh is here, and we're in this series, Deep Belonging, and we've been talking about family belonging and true belonging, belonging to oneself, and today we're talking about belonging to the infinite. And Steve McIntosh is the president of the Institute for Cultural Evolution, and he is an integral philosopher. If you don't know what that means, don't worry. Today is going to be one of those weekends where it's a little bit more academic. We've done these many times, but hopefully it's just going to stir and have questions. So if you have your program, you might want to get the note sheet out. Today's a good day to take notes. I think that evolutionary spirituality, which Steve is going to talk about, and integral philosophy are really important for as really in this season as humanity sort of looks at a cosmos story that all of us can share and find our place in. It's really important for us to understand that as we seek to live in a world of peace. And so, and then the last thing I'll say is, if any of this stuff resonates or stirs you in any way, I'd encourage you, my favorite book that Steve has put out is The Presence of the Infinite. And you can find that on Amazon. He'll be talking about that a little bit. But that's enough of me talking. Will you please do a great job of welcoming my new friend, Steve McIntosh? Come on up, Steve.
Good morning. It's lovely to see you all. It feels really good to be here, to be in a space, kind of an intimate space, where we're all here to feel the Spirit, right? Sunday morning, feeling the Spirit. So I want to thank Ryan and thank the Eastlake Community Church for bringing me here. And I want to focus on an aspect of feeling the Spirit that's becoming available from a kind of a new truth that's appearing just now in our time. And this new truth is coming from what's known as evolutionary spirituality. Evolutionary spirituality is not a path or a belief system by itself. It's really a family of perspectives that can accommodate a wide variety of spiritual views. Evolutionary spirituality is kind of like a complement or a supplement to existing forms of spirituality. It sort of supercharges the truth teachings of these forms, especially Christianity, I think, by showing how that evolution itself, the universe's ceaseless process of becoming, is a profound spiritual teaching. When Jesus says to his followers, "Be you perfect, even as our Father in heaven is perfect," I think that's kind of an invitation to evolve our consciousness. So evolutionary spirituality is very much about that. So rather than try to give you an overview of evolutionary spirituality, which I think will be better presented in tonight's format, where we're going to have questions and answers and discussion, this morning I want to focus on a particular aspect of evolutionary spirituality that's particularly useful and pragmatic and applicable. And that's this idea of spiritual energy. So I say here that in this slide, the idea is to harness spiritual energy. Maybe a better idea might be metabolizing it. You know, Ralph Waldo Emerson's, one of my favorite quotes of his, is the idea that every natural fact is a shadow of some higher spiritual fact. And I think the ubiquitous presence of physical energy in the world is in a sense a shadow of what I'm about to describe as a spiritual energy. Now, the word spiritual energy can mean a lot of things. It can apply to a lot of different ideas. Some people think of it, first of all, as subtle energy, like chi or ki, or something that's just sort of above the physical plane. We might also recognize spiritual energy in the magnetism or charisma of particularly evolved spiritual people or, you know, spiritual teachers. But the spiritual energy I want to focus on today, the definition I want to give it, is as higher purpose energy. That which we consider sacred, that which is the most meaningful things in our lives, that which we would willingly sacrifice ourselves for, this actually is a kind of energy in our lives. And the more we can make it, the more we can vivify it and clarify it in our thinking, the more we're, it's present to us from moment to moment, the more that I think we'll be charged with this spiritual energy. The word that I like to use to describe this higher purpose of values and virtues is the word transcendence, or the transcendent. It's kind of an umbrella term that can include anything in your life which is bigger than you. Now, obviously, for many people, this includes God or oneness, you know, or some kind of higher power. And that's certainly the maximum extent of transcendence. But transcendence can also include our sacred causes, whether it's planetary healing or world peace, or for me, it's the evolution of consciousness and culture. Of course, that which is transcendent, that which we might be willing to lay down our lives for, can also include our family, or you know, our intimate circle. It might even include ideals, such as liberty or equality. There are many things throughout human history that people have been dedicated to and devoted to, and that this devotion, this dedication to this thing which is bigger than ourselves, which lives beyond us, it gives us the energy to serve. So the takeaway, and what I'm really going to drive home here with some philosophical concepts, which are also, in a sense, spiritual technologies, is that the more we can clarify and make vivid that which we consider to be transcendent, the more that we'll find that this transcendent idea, this transcendent ideal, this transcendent devotion is really giving us spiritual energy in our lives. So the first sort of framing of this idea comes from the ancient triad of goodness, truth, and beauty. One way to think about goodness as a form of energy rather than a thing or an attribute, it's really more like an upward current of perfection, just like, you know, entropy is pulling down physical things, bringing them to a state of organization that's sort of less. This upward current of goodness is also, it's luring us. It's calling us from the inside, from its effect on our consciousness. The way we're magnetized to that which is good and true and beautiful. The way these qualities have a kind of a to-be-pursuedness built into them. You know, they have magnetism. They have gravity in our consciousness. And this isn't just a metaphor. There's really this upward current. But the word goodness isn't good enough to describe this upward current. The word goodness, any one single word overflows with more meaning than it can hold. And so that's why this concept of the beautiful, the true, and the good is really, it comes down to us from ancient philosophy. Now, a lot of people attribute it to the philosopher Plato. But evolutionary spirituality brings these ideas alive in a new way. It far transcends the bounds of evolutionary spirituality, of Platonic philosophy. So I want to talk about the beautiful, the true, and the good, and the different facets of these ideas. It's really these three values taken together. It's like a conceptual cathedral. It provides, once we understand what the beautiful, the true, and the good are and how they work in our lives, it provides both instructions for making our work better, for bringing spirit into the world, and assurances that we're loved and cared for. So I want to talk about the different facets of the beautiful, the true, and the good, but I just want to do a quick closed eye exercise. So close your eyes and think for a moment about what's most beautiful for you. Think about the most beautiful music that you love, For me, it's Beethoven. You know, the beauty of it just is moving. Think about the most beautiful visual art or a film that's really just charged you with beauty. Think about your favorite place in nature. How, in a way, when you're there amidst the beauty of nature, the finite universe becomes kind of thin. You know, the infinite that's there upholding the universe from within. Beauty is the way that that's sort of shining through, the faint glimmers of perfection. Now think about the truth. What's the highest truth for you? Maybe it's a form of spiritual teaching, you know, the gospel or the Bible or any spiritual teaching that's really resonated with you. Think about the literature that's brought truth into your life or the philosophy or the science. There's many ways that truth comes to us. But when we reconceive the beautiful, the true, and the good as spiritual energy, it sort of opens the aperture a little bit to allow this energy to come in to our lives. And as you're keeping your eyes still closed for just one more minute, when it comes to goodness, think about your heroes. Who are the most inspirational people who've really sort of brought goodness to personification in your life? I think about Martin Luther King, right, or John Muir, or any of the great saints or sages of history who've really made the world better through their lives. These are literal channels or vehicles of goodness. Okay, so open your eyes. So the beautiful, the true, and the good can be understood as literally some traces of the transcendent, fleeting glimpses of spiritual energy. And this is part of why these things are not objective, but they're not completely subjective either. Their energetic quality, the way they can charge us and motivate us and inspire us, gives us a hint about how these qualities are really forms of spiritual energy. Now, we could think of other words to describe the most intrinsic values, perhaps love or freedom, and those are certainly thoroughly intrinsic. But there's something very special conceptually and philosophically about the good, the true, and the beautiful, these three words. I show the word cloud because the beautiful, the true, and the good are like, they've been known as the primary values, so like primary colors. Just like three basic colors can combine and contrast to create all the colors in the human visible spectrum. The beautiful, the true, and the good, in a sense, are the most primary values that bring quality of all various kinds to the world. In fact, they can also be known as or understood as sort of the capstone qualities that are at the heart of entire dimensions of human experience. So for example, beauty is the capstone quality of the aesthetic dimension, all of the beautiful ways that we can feel pleasure and delight at all the beautiful things in the universe, all the aesthetic experiences. Truth is the capstone quality of the rational, the fact that the universe is intelligible, that we can learn more, and that as we learn more truth, we become more real in the process. Truth names the form of energy at the heart of that rational or mental dimension. And likewise, goodness is the capstone quality of the moral dimension of human experience. This is why they're kind of a system. It's not just sort of an arbitrary list of nice words. The good, the true, and the beautiful begin to describe something, and the way that they work as a system, the way, in a sense, goodness is beauty at rest. You know, the Alfred North Whitehead is famous for saying that beauty is the final contentment of the eros of the universe. And so the extent that beauty is this sort of complete perfection, I mean, it's always possible to make something more beautiful, but the extent to which something is beautiful is the extent to which it's displaying that perfection. But as we've experienced many of the things we find beautiful, they lose their charge after a while. That it's not just a coming to rest. There's also not only a yin, but also a yang aspect of this sort of great attractor of spiritual energy. You know, the truth is seeking. It's moving up. Truth is a ladder of distinctions. Whatever truth we know, there's always more truth that it's pointing to, a sort of a direction. But beyond science or facts or philosophy, truth becomes a value. It becomes a form of spiritual energy by bending toward goodness, by always relating back to the good. You know, the difference between a true fact and a spiritual truth is a spiritual truth is something that you can use. It's good for something, namely spiritual growth. Next slide. So there's many aspects, the beautiful, the true, and the good, many facets in the diamond. We could say that that the beautiful, the true, and the good are the comprehensible elements of divinity. We could think of them as the directions of evolution in consciousness and culture. How do we make the world a better place? We make it more beautiful, true, and good. We could also think of these as messages of love, right? That these are the way that spirit communicates us to us, you know, not in words, but in spiritual energy. But although I could spend the next 2 hours talking about the different facets of this diamond, this philosophical jewel of truth itself, I want to focus on a particularly useful element of this teaching about the good, the true, and the beautiful. And it has to do with these forms of spiritual experience as spiritual energy, as I've been saying. And so here we have the good, the true, and the beautiful rendered as practices. Right, so the most obvious one is the practice of truth, right? How do you experience truth? Well, you learn it and you teach it. And when you learn something that's really exciting and valuable, you're filled with the energy to want to go out and share it and teach it. And in some ways, you've never really learned something until you've taught it, right? Taking a test is a way of teaching what you've learned. And this engages the circuit. This idea of metabolism or you know, the beautiful, the true, and the good as the major food groups of spiritual nutrition, if you will. This learning and teaching begins to show how the truth and beauty tell us about goodness. So just as truth is experienced in this circuit of energy through learning and teaching, beauty too exhibits this sort of practice of taking in and giving out. And we all appreciate beauty, but when we're moved to try to create something beautiful, whether it's creating an image or music or simply beautifying our homes, this act of trying to make things more beautiful sort of opens the aperture for us, for our ability to experience beauty of every kind. Like an artist, if an artist goes to paint a sunset, by undertaking the task of painting the sunset, it allows her to see the sunset with new clarity, right, new detail. The majesty and the little bits are all kind of brought into her consciousness through the act of creating the beauty. And so, just as appreciating and creating in circuits the spiritual energy of beauty, learning and teaching the truth, goodness similarly is about the sort of receiving and giving, the devotion and service, right? Our devotion is how we learn the good. It's how we appreciate the good. And our service is how we teach the good, how we create the good in the world.
Well, hey, everyone. Excuse the interruption for a quick minute. My name is Kristen. I'm one of the team members here at Eastlake, and we're so glad that you're joining us today on the podcast. It's been so encouraging for us to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening to these messages and resonating with this idea that we just keep saying over and over again, which is life is a gift and love is the point, and that we are all committed to being a beneficial presence in our own community. So thanks for joining us. I hope that that's resonating with you. It's just really fun for us. So wanted to also say thank you to those of you who contribute. This place, all of these things that we do are happening because of people who make consistent, even just small consistent gifts. It helps us plan. It helps us know that there are really people behind us who want this thing to continue. So thank you to those of you who do that. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that if you find this beneficial in your own life. To make a contribution, it's really easy. You can go to eastlakecc.com and there's a donate button there with all the info. So thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the message.
Now, this has been the focus of my work for over 30 years, and I love the beautiful, the true, and the good. But as a philosopher, I have a particular interest in these conceptual ideas, but they're also highly abstract. And so recently, I've sort of been drilling down on this concept, trying to make it more applicable, more usable in our everyday lives. And the way that I've done this is by... Can you go back to the other slide? Sorry. Yeah. The way that I've done this is that unpacking this notion of devotion and service, like we know a lot about learning and teaching, right? As humans, we've figured out different ways of learning styles, different teaching techniques. We've gotten really good at sort of the details of this. Also in the aesthetic realm too, what it takes to appreciate, what it takes to create, these are well worked out. But what it takes, what this process is about, devotion and service, it's not as well worked out. It's kind of almost like a lost knowledge. And so recently I've come to appreciate how when we go within this circle, we come to this new area of understanding. Advance the slide. And this is this idea of virtues. For years and years, I completely ignored this body of thought. I thought it was sort of moralistic, sort of earnest, even somewhat priggish, like, okay, here's these things that we should do to be good. And recently, as a result of some academic work in this field, some new, it's sort of a burgeoning new field, even though it's ancient knowledge, right? And it was virtue ethics as an academic pursuit were replaced by different kinds of ethical philosophies. But virtue ethics as a philosophy has really come back in an important way, and there's all kinds of new insights. And within the frame of evolutionary spirituality, this idea of virtues takes on a whole new sort of vivid life. So in other words, I've got these seven virtues here, right? It's showing them as a word cloud. But there's so many different ways, so many different lists we could make of what are the virtues, right? Ben Franklin had a list of 16, and you know, throughout the centuries, thinking about virtues, there's many different takes on it. But there's something particularly interesting, something systematic about these kind of ancient seven, right? So this comes down to us from primarily from the Catholic tradition, these seven virtues. So you've got on Wikipedia, type in seven virtues. It'll come up with these seven. But these are not just sort of arbitrarily declared by tradition. They're sort of backed by the genius of history. And it was the ancient Greeks who sort of pioneered these four values here: justice, temperance, prudence, courage. But then it was Thomas Aquinas, right, the great genius of the Middle Ages, who really brought in the idea of faith, hope, and love. I mean, these are originally thought of as faith, hope, and charity. Sometimes they're translated that way. But charity was in the Latin caritas, which I think is better translated as love, you know, than charity itself. But again, this is not just a compilation of nice ideas. There's a way in which, even if we substituted different words for these fields, for these points on the heptagon, I think we'll find that there's something energetic about these virtues. So, as a definition, you know, there's lots of overlap between these concepts, but values, like the beautiful, the true, and the good, those are like headings. Those are our goals, those are our aims. And virtues, those are our habits. They've been known as habits of the heart, right? A virtue is who you are. It's molded into your character. So in the moment when you're called upon to be virtuous, it's not some calculation. It's not something you do because you think you're gonna strategically make your way. Well, maybe prudence is. But the idea that these are actually not just shoulds, but they're cans. They're actually techniques of happiness. Virtue ethics have actually been criticized for being too self-centered. You know, because as Aristotle understood, you don't do these for some for some obligation, although you do, as I'll explain, but you also do them because these are the habits of the heart that make you happy, that lead to your self-actualization, that allow you to give your gift to the world. So we could substitute other words. So for example, justice, we could call it fairness. Temperance, kind of a stodgy word, we could call it self-mastery. Right? Prudence could be strategic wisdom. Courage could be determination. Right? Hope, optimism. And faith could be sort of trusting loyalty. But regardless of what words we assign in this, you know, among the all that, there's probably one scholar made a list of 130 different words which correspond to virtues. But one of the clues to the fact that this is a natural theology is that a large body of work in positive psychology, the father of positive psychology is Martin Seligman, and he's done a lot of work completely within a secular frame. And his list of virtues that make you happy corresponds almost exactly to this ancient traditional list of seven. But part of what lifts this idea of classical virtues or primary virtues out of just a received tradition and starts to hook them up with this sort of spiritual science of evolutionary spirituality is when we start to integrate the seven virtues with the primary values. So recall this slide, right, where we spend some time on this talking about these. If we look inside and ask, what is it? How does this energy flow from devotion to service and back again? That leads us to, next slide. If we look at the seven virtues inside of this circuit, we begin to kind of understand how these ideas or these habits of the heart are actually techniques of perception or ways we can harness or grab hold of the spiritual energy that's naturally flowing through the universe. Okay, so this is the key slide of the whole talk because it begins to show where the energy is coming from, right? And why these are not just a nice list that we could, you know, just come up with our own list, and there's nothing particularly systematic or special about these seven. Virtues have been known as ethics, right? They have an obligation. And most people think of ethical obligations as other people. It also include, you know, animals, the environment, right? Our history, nature. There's many things we could say that we can affirm our ethical obligation there too. One thing about virtue ethics is it begins to show that these obligations or these ethical duties are not just to other people or other things, they're also to ourself. That while selflessness is certainly commendable, if we want to serve, we actually have to make sure that we're being brought along in the bargain. That what we owe to ourselves is self-control and a strategic thinking about how we're going to give our gift to the world. These are virtues, and they're ways that we can tap in to the more noble aspect of self-interest. But most interesting, most inspiring for me is to begin to understand that which we consider to be transcendent, whatever the transcendence is, the list of things which you might make that includes the things that you would be willing to lay down your life for, this is a profound source of spiritual energy. And these virtues, they're not only obligations to the transcendent, they're also, they're like jobs that pay, right? They're obligations, but by devoting ourselves, by fulfilling our obligations to these sources, that we're filled with spiritual energy. So hope, if we think about, let's start with courage. As the idea of a source of energy. If courage is who I am, if it's who I know myself to be, if it's a standard that I hold myself up to, if I know that I need to be courageous, that in the moment of fear, that courage is like a force field that can push back against whatever forces of fear are trying to manipulate me or push me around. But by molding my character to this virtue, by making it who I am, it actually creates a channel, if you will, in which the spiritual energy can flow. Likewise, hope. You know, hope is definitely a source of energy. And that's kind of why I have faith at the top. I mean, certainly we could argue that love is the highest virtue, and I'm not going to argue with that. But there's something about faith that I think is perhaps underappreciated in our age. You know, faith isn't just a belief. It's not just sort of a confirmation or conforming to something that you don't have evidence for. Faith is a technique of perception for spiritual reality. Like the Pascal, one of my favorite philosophers, Blaise Pascal, said, human things must be known in order to be loved, but divine things must be loved in order to be known. And faith is one of those ways that we can tap into this energy of transcendence and really make it ours. So again, these begin to show where the energy is coming from, that these qualities, these virtues, allow the energy that comes from the transcendent through us, that, you know, as love moves to justice and that we have justice for ourselves, and this makes us want to go out and be courageous and have hope that which we have faith in truly is a loving source of reality. And I guess we could sort of see that the devotion and service circuit that I showed in the last slide, we could transcribe that here. And we could see how these obligations, that this energy is flowing here, you know, from the transcendent to the self, from the self to the transcendent. And as this energy flows, you know, we give our service to the world. So I want to end with one final, brief, quick, closed eye exercise. So close your eyes one more time. And think to yourself, what is transcendent for you? You know, clearly there are many things. Clearly our loved ones, perhaps the planet, the environment, you know, perhaps humanity. And I think for most of us, some kind of higher power, some sort of, you know, the totality exists necessarily. And this oneness in the universe, this source of reality, is, I think, something that's bigger than us and for which we all really ultimately live. So in your mind, as you think about the transcendent, when you get home, perhaps, make a list, prioritize it, fold it up into a nice little bindle and put it on your altar or by your bedside, and open it up now and again. Think about that which is transcendent. And think about how you're devoted to it. You know, think about how you act out that devotion, how that transcendent calls your heart to be devoted. And then finally, think about among those things which you consider transcendent, how do you serve those things? How do you sacrifice your own self-interest for those transcendent realities? And how could you serve those more? This is an exercise that's worth repeating on a daily basis, because the benefit, of course, is spiritual growth, self-actualization, and perhaps also self-transcendence. Okay, open your eyes. Look around at all the other transcendent spiritual beings here with you this morning, with us. So let me invite you to stand. So the sending is, go out in the world, live these virtues, allow the spiritual energy to flow through you, serve someone, and love someone. Thank you all very much.